It starts when you start.
Okay.
Hi, this is Tiffany Mane, and I'll be interviewing Mr. Donnell Harrell here in Clarkston.
Hold on a sec, too. I'm so sorry. The camera just turned off.
Hi, this is Tiffany Mane, and I'll be interviewing Mr. Donnell Harrell here in Mississippi. And if you could just state your name for the camera.
Donnell Harrell.
Okay, and where are you from?
I'm from South Mississippi, a little town called Columbia, Mississippi. Population about 7,000 people.
Okay, and just so you know, we do have a couple consent forms for you to sign. And just state that you are okay with being recorded and
yes,
having taken some time.
Yes.
Okay. And you grew up in Columbia, Mississippi, is that what
yeah.
you said? And what brought you to Tacoma County?
Well, I had gone to Natchez College, which is, at that time was a junior college, as they call it. Now they're called community colleges. And I went to Alcorn College, now called Alcorn State University. And I pursued a career in teaching.
Okay.
I received a call from the what was then called the Director of Negro Schools, J.W. Snapley, to come to work. And I came to Higgins, which was a high school for black kids, in 1964, September of 1964.
Okay. And so you said that you pursued a career in teaching. What made you want to pursue teaching?
Well, to be honest with you, I was torn between going to law school and teaching. I was always fascinated with social studies and history. So when I was in line to register, rather than to go to pre-law because of access to funds and not knowing where funds were, I decided to go perhaps teach for a while, to perhaps go to law school, but of course it didn't work out that way. So I ended up teaching, and that's what I stayed with for 36 years.
Okay. And what is your current occupation?
I'm retired. Administrator.
Oh, you're
retired. Retired, yes. I retired in 2000.
Okay. And so you said you taught for 36 years, so what path did you take to become?
Well, I started out as a teacher of social studies.
Okay.
And I taught social studies at Higgins. And then in 1971, the schools in the South had to desegregate. So many of the teachers at Higgins went to Clarksdale High, late 9 through 12. And of course, the rest of the teachers stayed at Higgins, and of course it became a junior high school.
Mm-hmm.
That was tradition in those days. When integration came, the white high school became the high school for all students that wanted to attend. And many times the black high school became the junior high school. And of course, there were some who wanted to name it Clarksdale Junior High. They may have been named that. And of course, then the group of citizens had it changed back to Higgins Junior High. And of course, Higgins was a long-time educator in this community. That's how it got its name.
Okay. So can you tell us a little bit about that story? About Higgins? Do you know anything about Higgins?
Not a whole lot. I think it was built around 1953. And it became the junior high school at 7-7-1. But in terms of Mr. Higgins, he had gone to Jackson College at the time when I came here. He had gone elsewhere. J.W. Stampley was the director of Negro Schools when I came in 64. In fact, I think he came a year before, 1963.
And so you were talking a little bit about segregated schools and the desegregation. So growing up in Mississippi, did you attend segregated schools?
Yes.
Okay, and what was that like for you?
It was difficult. I said I was from Columbia, but I'm really from the country place.
Okay.
And of course, at that time, you know, basically all the counties, 82 counties in Mississippi, you had a black school in just about every community. There were about five or six schools down in Marion County. That's the name of the county I'm from. And the school I attended was Friendship high school for black kids. And of course, in 1959, they built a new school, a consolidated school. They called it Marion Central. So when integration came, the kids who lived, I believe, east of the Pearl River went to Marion Central. The kids who lived west went to West Marion. That's how they decided who would go where. And of course, the friendship school I attended was very limited in resources. We didn't even have a library.
Okay.
We had a room where the principal put several sets of encyclopedias. Of course, we didn't have a gym to play basketball. We played on the ground. But when we played, I mean, we practiced on the ground. We had a community center called the Lampton Community Center where we played our games, basketball games. We didn't have track, football, et cetera, which we had. So we had limited opportunities at Friendship High School. And of course, I graduated in 1960, May, in fact, or May 15th, I believe, 1960.
Okay. And so would you say that schools with limited resources were sort of common?
Yes, were common in Mississippi. You see, what happened? Well, in 1953 or 54, the legislature passed a law. I've been gone from school so long that what did it do? What is this? What is that sound I hear? It's me.
No.
I'm trying to remember what that law did. It made it almost created a system whereby, well, let me get into that because I forgot what the
okay.
law did. I forgot. It may come to me as we talk.
Okay.
Yeah. The Civil Rights Act? No. That was much earlier. But this is a law passed by the legislature, which provided for schools, regarding funding for schools.
Okay.
And also provided for a bond issue to pass, you had to have a 60% majority. Of course, that came in the wake of the Brown versus Topeka Board of Education, Brown versus Topeka Board of Education of 1954. Many saw that as making it difficult to be a public school because some men of the whites would go to private schools.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in 71, when integration came, the kids stayed at Clarksdale High, and then 5 or 6 months later, Lee Academy was built. And of course, the next school year, many of the white kids left. I guess we had about 25 to 29% white population in the schools. And now I would venture to say you may have 10% white kids in the schools. Now at that time, after 71, they paired the school. The federal government came in and paired the school, okay? You went to one school, grades 1 and 2, another school, 3 and 4, another school, 5 and 6. And Superintendent Bob Ellett, a few years later, I have copies of court orders, if you'd like to see them, was able to go to court and get the school realigned to have grades 1 through 6 in each school. Now, what happened, there were two schools in the white community at that time, Heidelberg and Kirkpatrick. To ensure blacks attending those schools, they had target zones. One was over here in the Eastgate area, that kids would go to Kirkpatrick. Upper Brickyard, I know you don't know what this is, Upper Brickyard, they had so many kids would go to be bused to Heidelberg. Now, one of the problem with that now, there's no need for busing now because black folks live all over the city. At one time, Oakhurst was a white community. Well, black folks live all over town. Of course, this means for white flight in some a lot of instances.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I go on with that, but so I'll stop there.
Okay. Okay. So, in your opinion, do you think that the education system has improved since you went to school or since you were teaching?
I would think so. We hired, when I left in 2000, I asked the board to hire my assistant, Dr. Wilma Wade. And I served 5.25 years as superintendent, and she served 7 years. And of course, at that time, the state had a rating system for schools 1 through 5. If you were 5, you were superior. In many instances, our school kind of rate 3. Of course, that meant what? Average. We have a new superintendent who came in, 2006? Seven. And I think he's really making a difference.
Okay.
He's making a difference in education here. He's, to my knowledge, and I serve on the board, by the way. He is putting teeth into the word accountability. Of course, he takes the position that if you have a problem with an administrator or a principal or a teacher, work with them or do all you can to improve that person. And if it doesn't happen, then that person needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the board has supported his effort to improve education. I think he's doing an excellent job, really, to use the funds from the federal government and state and local to improve education. We have a ways to go now because the state under Dr. Bounce has eliminated the rating system that we had. Of course, a new one had been in place, and now they're kind of experimenting with it. New measures have not been established in terms of how to effectively evaluate schools. They're still in the process of doing that. But I think we're making progress. Mr. Dupree has appointed supervisors, for example, in math, language arts, to go into each school and work with principals, work with teachers to improve their skills and make them accountable. You know, at one time, under the old system, the school was based, the school would either pass or fail. But now, under the old system, the district would pass or fail, but under the old system, it went out to the school level. Of course, now we've gone down to teachers. We can identify what teachers are doing and whether or not they are successful or not. But the new system is in place, and it remains to be seen how we will fare under the new system. But I'm impressed with what I've seen, Mr. Dupree.
Okay. And you were talking a little bit about government funding and whatnot, so we were just wondering what role the government played in those improvements. Do you think that the government is funding enough?
Well, I've heard it said that there's no school left behind. Not enough funds have been appropriated for that purpose. We've done pretty well, but I've heard the governor the other day say that he's asking all agencies to look at possibly cutting 5%. You know how the economy is with the things that are going on Wall Street and Main Street. So what our funding will be for another year remains to be seen. So I really don't know what that would be like.
Okay.
Of course, teachers didn't get a raise this past year. Of course, they're looking forward to a 3% raise, but the way things are now, I don't know if that will occur or not. So they're looking at cutting to just stay afloat.
Okay. And are there any specific things that need to be improved in the education system here in Mississippi?
Yes. We educate a number of. Turn out a lot number of teachers, and so many. I did notice the stats on that, but so many of them leave the state, take jobs elsewhere because of the pay what they receive in pay. And we're losing teachers. And of course, we have a number of things called AmeriCorps teachers in our schools who come in and stay 2 years, I believe, to teach. But retaining and hiring quality teachers is the number one. And there are those who take the position that the only way you're going to get more quality teachers in public schools is that the pay, you increase the pay. Then there are others who would argue, we're doing the best we can with the resources we have. And so many of those we're educating are going to Alabama or Tennessee and other places to work because of what? The pay is so low. We always try to keep up with the Southeastern average, but we don't do that. We usually, between Arkansas and Mississippi, we'd be battling for last place in terms of funding. So we're poor. We're poor. And we spend a large percent of our state budget on education. But the point is, that's not enough. It's not enough. And then even within the state, you have DeSoto County. I read the other day where DeSoto County surpassed Jackson in student population. We have a problem in the Delta because many times teachers per period don't want to come to the Delta. They say, well, what are we going to do once we get here? We can go to the casino. Well, some don't go to the casino. So you find that even within the state, teachers will go where the things to do outside of teaching. DeSoto County, for example, they have access to what? Memphis. If you go in the Jackson area, you see you have a metropolitan area. So the Delta, we do get quality teachers, but we don't get enough. So the AmeriCorps program is helping in that regard. So, and retaining teachers. We have a situation in Mississippi where, at one time, if you were a teacher, an administrator's too now, you had to teach, you had to be 55 and have 30 years to retire. Okay, now you can get 25 years, regardless of age, and retire. The only problem with that is you have to take another job after that to really survive. And then you have so many who are eligible for retirement now. And of course, replacing those people is difficult. Now, we've gone to a thing called a tutorial program where government funds are provided where seasoned teachers who retire can come in and work with first-year teachers. I think that's it. But what I'm saying is many efforts are being initiated to improve the quality of education in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And I think we have a dynamic superintendent who is looking for ways to do that. And of course, you know, many times the success of a school district depends on the leadership mm-hmm. of the superintendent. I think we have a dynamic one. This is only his second year, and he's done a tremendous job with our students and the whole system.
So you were mentioning sort of things to do and how that affects teachers wanting to come to the Delta. So we were wondering what kind of geography does the Delta have and how does that affect things outside of not only education but everything else sort of?
Socialized, mm-hmm. social activity. Well, I think the Delta is basically a farming area. I understand from some that Delta State wanted to establish Delta State here. Somebody told me that Baxter, which is just in Cleveland, they wanted to establish here, but the farmers didn't want it. So you're really looking at a farming community. Now, there are those that, depending on who you talk to, there are those who would say, well, we're not going to attract industry in Clarksdale to a large extent until we improve education. So some were advocating charter schools. Our response was, well, our funding comes from local sources. We get funding. We get from the state. We get from the federal government. Our state superintendent has said that is not on our agenda. Our agenda is to improve quality of education as it turns like this. So in order to get state funds, we have to follow the mandate of the state. Now, there are those who would say, well, John Henry over here could use 3 plumbers right now. You can't find them. Somebody over here needs somebody to do something else. Well, that has been taken out of the curriculum. Well, put it back. Well, the state won't pay for it. So you have those, depending on who you talk to, would say that we're not educating kids, enough kids, for the local markets that's available. Oklahoma Community College offers a number of courses that, you know, that is helping in some areas, but I don't think it's enough. Yeah. And then, depending on who you talk to, some would argue that the public school system is in disarray. It's not producing quality education for kids. And to some extent, there is some truth in that, I must admit. But we're making progress. And dealing with children, you just don't walk in, they're like building a house. Education and educating kids is a process. You just don't do it overnight. It takes time. And you have to start with the youngsters. And of course, you have a problem with kids wanting to fight and misbehave. At the one time, they were teenagers who did it. Now you have 5 or 6 year old taking guns and knives to school. You read about it all the time. So you have a safety problem. And of course, we recently hired some our own police force to some extent, they call it that. There will be, two of them will be at the high school and the other two will be at the 2 junior high schools to keep down the violence so teachers can do what? Teach. That's their primary purpose. So sometimes we're faced with disruptions. We're doing all we can to minimize that. By the way, back to, it came to me, I don't deal with it every day. The state passed what are called the minimum program. I believe it's 1953, minimum education program, which says that the state will provide this amount of money, dollars, to every district, regardless. That's what it was called, the minimum program, minimum education program. Yeah, which equalized salaries around the state. Everybody would put out the salary scale, say, well, if you got 1 year experience, this is what you get. The local government can supplement that. But this is what would be the minimum that everybody in the state who teaches will get. That's what it was called. And what happened before that, I've heard that black teachers were paid less than white teachers. Of course, in some instances, insurance companies discriminate against blacks in terms of, of course, you read about class action lawsuit. I was part of one with one insurance company. We had to pay some funds back. Two, where they discriminated against people. You read about it all the time. But that was called the minimum education program. And in that same vein, it may not have been with the same legislation, but at the same time, as I indicated earlier, they required for a bond issue to pass, it had to be 60%. Now, that was the allure of Brown versus the Topeka Board of Education, which meant that if you're going to have build schools and use public funds, you're going to have to get 60%, which would be difficult to do because of the climate. I see a lot of the kids, they had white flight then, okay? And even when the judge ordered, the Fifth Circuit ordered the desegregation of Southern schools, you sure to have white flight, okay? And of course, that's what and many of your Delta schools, unfortunately, are predominantly black.
So, do you think segregation still exists to some extent?
What?
Does segregation still exist to some extent, even though it's not legal? Okay. And what effect do you think that has on students and their quality of education and their.
I really don't know. Effect on them in terms of their mental well-being or the quality of education they get, or what?
Both. Well, in 2007, just to add something, in 2007, Mississippi had the lowest state scores out of the whole nation. Do you think maybe that plays a role? I mean, do you hope that this is going to improve, and how does the not-so-legal segregation play into that?
Well, you have to be a country to understand this. When you take the cream off the top, you know what it leaves. I would venture to say that, you see, white kids who are in private schools are not included in that, what you're talking about. If white kids were part of the equation, his school would be higher. There's no doubt about it. And even in districts where you have successful schools, the population, unfortunately now, you know, there are a number of white kids in the schools. And of course, there are a lot of factors in terms of why this is true, you know, cultural background, exposure, and all these kinds of things. It has, to me, it has nothing to do with inferiority or superiority. But I think the exposure that the kids have had, they bring to the table. You know, people use any measurement to justify what they want to do. Of course, the whole concept of taking their kids out of private schools, public schools, the black kids were poor, the, you know, all that crap. But I don't know if I answered your question or not, but if I knew about what you just said about the statistics on that. If the white kids were in the public school, the standards would be great. The performance level of the state would be higher, no doubt about it. And of course, they are not tested in terms of state results. They may be tested for other reasons, but not for that purpose.
And so just to sort of get a little bit of background on you, what was your family like growing up? I know you grew up in rural Mississippi.
Right.
So what was your family?
Well, I grew up in what is called the Piney Woods. That's what it's called. Because that's where the Piney Woods, pine trees, tall, you know. There was a school called Piney Woods, you may have heard of it. It started by Lawrence C. Jones. I was blessed. The older you get, you realize the importance of family. My mom and dad stayed together. My dad worked. My mom worked off and on. We knew there were two boys for a long time. I was the second child. We knew we had to go to school if we were going to stay in that home. And my dad stressed education. He always told us, I can hear him now, I want you boy to go to school and get an education because I don't want you to have to work the way I have to survive. And of course, he related stories of growing up when he was third grade, I believe he said, or fourth. He had to get out, he had to stop school. He thought I would learn it. Well, he used his word, I would learn it real good. I had to stop school to work. So he said, I want you boys to go on. And I took that. I took him at his word. And you had a lot of community support. And most of us who lived in that little community were related anyway. Near the, right off the Pearl River there. And we were required, we had church once a month. And right now, in that same church, St. Paul Methodist Church, it's a small community, and they cannot have a full-time pastor because you can't afford it. So what they do, they put two or three churches together. The pastor will come there, go somewhere next Sunday, this kind of thing. The church is not, being able to support a full-time pastor. But you had people who encouraged you to go on. They saw some things in you, and they encouraged you in Sunday school and Bible school. And when I was 6 or 7 years old, I remember my mom bought me a bulletin board and kind of a thing, miniature, and we did some things with that. I was a pretty good basketball player, finished high school, and I wanted to go to Jackson State. I went up there for a trial basketball. I didn't make it. They offered me a tuition scholarship. And I ended up at Natchez College with a basketball scholarship. I didn't know. I asked the Lord, Lord, what am I going to do after I leave here? The grades were pretty good. They were B plus. How am I going to school next year? A person who had worked at Natchez College worked at Alcorn. He came down and said there was scholarships available, the NDEA loan it was called. And I applied for that, so I went to Alcorn. finished all corn, and of course, Toyota ended up here. And went to Clarksdale High, and I saw how the principal operated the school, high school. And I said to myself, you know, I can do this. In fact, I can beat him doing that. I'm serious, I can beat him doing that. So at that time, Delta State had some problem with kids going to Delta State. So I went to Delta State 74, I believe, got my master's in administration. And I was appointed in 79 to Riverton Elementary School as principal. I went back to Delta State, got my specialist. And then the position of assistant superintendent became available in 1982. I stayed at Riverton Elementary for 3 years. In 1982, I went to the central office as assistant superintendent. Of course, in 2000, I became superintendent. I've always been one who has tried to learn from the situation that I found myself in. Being assistant superintendent was not easy. And you still have that practice going on today whereby you appointed, you find blacks appointed to assistant positions, not because of quality or what they can do, but to satisfy the community as they were. You have it today, people being appointed assistant, you know, give some titles and stuff, very little responsibility, being honest with you. I knew that. I knew that the role that was expected. But in my own way, I kept making a difference when I could. And when the position became available to the superintendent, there were some problems there. The superintendent, I was going to the superintendent, didn't want me for the job. He made the statement to Dr. Kinsey, who was the education director for the state for NACP, that if you're going to keep white kids in the schools, you got to always have a white principal at the high school and a white superintendent. He meant that. And there may be some truth in that. So for a long time, the principal at the high school was white. And of course, they appointed, I applied for the superintendent's job when he retired, Bob Ellis, in 2002. And of course, they ended up getting Dr. Wheaton. He came from, and of course, he was never satisfied being here. His wife was never satisfied. So he left in 2005. Of course, he took the superintendent job in Tishomingo County. And of course, at that time, the board had changed. The composition of the board had changed from two blacks to three. And I got the job because there were three blacks on the board. Had it been three whites and two blacks, I would never have gotten the job. So since 1995, the superintendent of Clarksdale School District has been black. And that's in the main because three blacks serve on the board. Now you know the rest of the story. And I venture to say, even when the last superintendent was selected, the two whites wanted the white person that I had made assistant superintendent. And he got two votes. The superintendent got, and I got three. So, by the way, the board members are appointed, the city here, the board members are appointed by the mayor and commissioners. You have four commissioners. Your board members serve 5-year terms. And each commissioner has an appointment. And the mayor that I was talking to earlier appointed me, that's at large. We have five board members who serve 5 staggered terms. Each year, a board member term expires. And of course, a new member or the old member return in March of every year. My term expired 2010. I hope the mayor will reappoint me, but if he doesn't, that's fine. I'm retired.
It's kind of interesting to see how the state government works to to build sort of the education system here. I didn't really know the logistics behind that. So is there anything else that you would like to add about the education system? What role you played? Anything at all?
I hope I made a difference. I tried to stress to teachers the importance, even when I was principal, even when I was assistant superintendent. I tried to stress the importance of teaching every child like it is your own child. If you got 27 students, those are your 27 your personal students. When I was principal at Riverton, sometimes they say I was too blunt, but I was fair and I expected them to do the level best. But I told many of the black teachers, whether you're teaching a black child or a white child, teach that child like he's the potential Einstein. You'd be surprised what returns you would get from him. I did have a problem with special education and kids being put in special ed. I remember I had a teacher when I was at Riverton. And I let her know it too. When she dealt with a black child, see, and that was another problem, and I know how pervasive it is now. But some black kids are different in terms of how you teach kids. Kids are not the same. And I think a lot of the white teachers initially, when they taught white kids, many of them were self-motivated. You know what I mean? There was not a whole lot of, this is my summation now. I can't prove this. But many of them were self-starters. And of course, you can understand their background. And that's what they were used to dealing with. Kids, you didn't have to pull up, you know, I don't know what your background calls it. You didn't have to pull them and out, you know. But when they went into the situation of black kids, it was a new thing for them. And one of the teachers I had, one experience I want to share with you, Mr. Harrell, I can't do it. I'm going to call him Johnny. And I'm going to call him Joe Plummer. he won't do this. I think he needs to be tested. What happens? That's what happened in a lot of instances. This is a new thing. I can't deal with this. He needs to be tested. See if he's special. Right? Or you don't want to do what's necessary to make your adjustment to teaching. I said, well, okay, we'll start the process. All right, go around to little white kids. And when I went to Riverton, 7% of the kids were white. And 80% of the teachers were white. So you can figure out the rest. Now, when it came to a white kid, when I discussed it with this teacher, I can see her now. Well, what about, well, Jane, well, let me work with a little longer. Let me work with a little bit more. I think I can bring her around. You have to deal with that. Now, how much of that's it's still going on, I would venture to say, there's some of it. Now, the state, now when I was superintendent, I don't know what the cutoff point. Now, if you had more than 10% of your student population in special ed, the state, oh, red flag went up. They would need to come investigate. And they come around period, I don't know if every 3 years, what the situation now. But a red flag went up and the state sent somebody in to investigate. Wait a minute, now, what are you doing here? You got 11% or 12% of these kids in special ed. Well, let me see. So that was a problem I dealt with. White teachers teaching black kids. And I said to the new superintendent, that needs to be monitored for all teachers for that matter. Black, white, whatever teacher you have. To make sure they're doing their best. And their teaching methods would be more inclusive to make sure you try to reach all kids. Because all the kids are the same. They come to you on different levels. Now, we have a Head Start program here, and I didn't do enough of it, I'll be honest with you. There needs to be more coordination with the Head Start program, what they are doing in terms of what is required once they get to kindergarten. We have a kindergarten. The state governor winner, when he was governor, passed the Education Reform Act of '82. That did a lot to improve education, including kindergarten. We're now pushing for a pre-kindergarten. Of course, important reason being, if we get them there, we can kind of mold them and get them ready for kindergarten. Of course, Head Start takes care of that. But I think there needs to be more cooperation between the two agencies to improve the quality of people who are coming to us in terms of how they're being educated. That's all I know to add. I can't think of anything else. Hello?
Okay.
Wake up.
No, I'm awake.
Okay.
I'm nodding my head and I'm just trying to process what you're saying by Head Start. So thank you for the interview. I think that's all we have for you. And thank you very much. Like I said, we have good time for you to sign.
I need to sign the payroll check.
Yes.
Let's see what this is. Excuse me. Hello? Hey. Where is he? He'd be at 10 o'clock. Tell me if he's 10 o'clock.